Well, welcome, everybody. Where have you been? Kind of feels like I've been away for ages. It's only a couple of weeks. How strange. So I always like to remember my guru, Baba Muktananda, who would begin every program by saying in Hindi, Sabko bare sanmane ke saath prem se radik swagat. With great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. And he would always say that to welcome another person is the essence of spirituality. So in that spirit, I want to welcome you all tonight. Before I forget, I want to welcome everyone watching on the global satsang or on the internet. So when I thought about this program tonight, I thought it could only be one person, Baba Muktananda. And a couple of reasons. Of course, one reason is, if I have the slightest excuse, I like to contemplate Baba's teaching. So coming back, we contemplate Baba's teaching. But also, while I was away, we missed a significant date, which was the 15th of August. And the 15th of August was what's called in Baba circles Divya Diksha Din, or the Day of Divine Initiation. And that was the day in 1947 when he received Shaktipat from his guru. And that's all described in his spiritual autobiography, Play of Consciousness. And that book is on the reading list of the course and will be on your final exam, so you should read it. On that day, Baba had his mind blown because the transmission happened and he had the experience of Brahman, or the Absolute, quite beautifully described in there. So we always celebrate it because each of us has had an awakening at a different time, but the one we have in common is Baba's awakening, because all of our awakenings are kind of in the same family flow or dynamic as coming from that moment in 1947. So Baba's a very good choice. So I decided to go to my secret stash. I've got 24-hour guards watching my stash of transcripts. And these are transcripts of Baba's programs, unedited, raw transcripts. And you really get a flavor of what it was like to be with Baba. So, as I say, we pay an arm and a leg to our six guards, because they have to guard each other too, because they might. Anyway, this is from the 13th of February, 1979, in Oakland, California. Now, there's an ashram, a big ashram, in Oakland, California. It's in a pretty poor area of Oakland, but it's become a beautiful community. And at that time, I was running the Los Angeles ashram, and occasionally I would go up and spend a little time in Oakland with Baba, and then I would go down.
Did you want to show the photos?
Hmm? And the next thing I want to do is show you some photos. By the way, August 15th was significant also because it was Girish's birthday then. And today's Mamata's birthday, but she's not here, so give her a hand, too. Et cetera. Okay, let's see. So these are some pictures of Baba on tour. And this I recognize as Sydney. This was Baba did satsang in the backyard in a devotee's house in Turamura. Is that such a place?
Taramara.
What?
I used to live there.
Did you live there in 1974, or were you even born? So, yeah, we were with Baba in Sydney, in Taramara. And, okay, there he is, giving you some animated talk. What else? Next? Baba on tour. You can always tell by the way he's dressed, giving a serious talk. Next? Telling probably a Sheikh Nasruddin story. Okay.
Look at his throne.
It's quite elaborate. Next, is that it? Now that's that might be Los Angeles. Is that Los Angeles? Mm-hmm. Or it's either Los Angeles or Fallsburg.
How could they render the tent?
Oh, I don't know. It's rendered, yeah.
I think it's South Fallsburg.
Baba's leading the chant here. So is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. So just to set the context, this is from Baba on tour. There's always different. Baba's talks in India and his talks on the tour. And while the ones in India were more esoteric in a way, the ones on tour were more general and uplifting in some way. So this is Oakland. He's obviously just arrived from Honolulu, and he's come to Oakland on his tour. So he says, Satgurunath Maharaj Ki Jai, Sabko Varasan Mani Ke Sat, with great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. When I was in Honolulu, it rained a lot there, very much. It rained many times. One day it rained so heavily, I wondered whether I should go to the program or not, thinking that nobody would come. I went to the hall anyway, and it was a full house. Today, too, I was thinking tonight, I can leave the hall quickly, early, because there'll be fewer people. Well, it seems everybody came anyway. It's very likely, and I think that you're all very good people, and you take a lot of interest in God. Even though it's raining, even though it's cold, still all of you have come. That is a true sign of seekers. A seeker, a person who loves God, doesn't care about the heat, cold, darkness, or light, or anything, because his mind is absorbed in that, in his real work. And even though we're absorbed in sadhana, it still was very nice up in Queensland from a weather point of view. A lot of people said, are you tempted to move up there and things like that? Yes. No, but for 2 years now, we've done a Queensland tour in the middle of winter. It breaks up the winter nicely. And so now it seems like, having come back from it, it seems like winter will be very short now. In fact, today seemed like the first day of spring, didn't it? Well, I don't know. Baba says, very good. Once again, with great respect, I welcome you. Now, this reminds me of one of the shlokas of Bhatrahari. And Bhatrahari was a king, but he's also a poet, and Baba quoted him a lot. The king Bhatrahari said, that person is fortunate, that person is blessed. It doesn't matter if the person is living in a forest, or living in a cave, or eating only leaves, or wearing only rags, only a piece of cloth on his body. If that person has seen the effulgent God right inside himself, then he is blessed. He is blessed. That person meditates with love. As he does so, he drinks the nectar of bliss within himself. That person is fortunate. That person is blessed. And Baba is saying that no matter what your station in life, you may be rich, you may be poor, if you know the self, if you've connected with that inner place, then you're blessed. And you might be the richest person in the world. And if you're out of touch with that, then your heart is dry. Doesn't matter. So this is his point. He says, there's a particular bird called Chataka. It drinks the water from the thunder. It doesn't drink the water from this earth. It drinks the water from the thunder, right from the sky. A person who drinks the nectar of bliss is fortunate. So this is Hindu mythology. This, the bird called the Chataka or Chakora is supposedly flies on its back looking towards heaven, and it feeds on the nectar that comes down from the moon. And so I'm sure there's scientific evidence of that. All the Tathagatas I know do that. But the point is, metaphorically, it means that we have to be able to experience the nectar that's hidden, but is available if we know how to look for it, the joy of the self. So Baba says, the mind creates all this play, all this drama, all these pictures, all these dances, and you keep pursuing this world, this play, which is created by the mind. And you look for happiness in this world, which is created by the mind. Looking for happiness in this world in this way is nothing but looking for happiness in your dreams. That man is useless, I guess, the one who does that. You have the creation of your own mind, and you keep pursuing the creation of your own mind all the time. In Vedanta, there's a particular word called mrigajala, a mirage. For example, there's an animal or a deer. It looks at this mirage and thinks that it is water and runs to drink the water, but there's no meaning in it. So you see a mirage and you go for it and it's not there. A person who sees the light of the self, who meditates on it and who becomes absorbed in it, drinks the nectar of the inner self. There's so much meaning in that person's life. So if we pursue happiness with externals, he's saying, we're always frustrated. There's no meaning. But if we find the joy that's within, hidden within, then there's great meaning. Then even if we pursue external things, we're never out of touch with that inner connection. Baba says, man most of the time spends his time in dwelling in the realm of his own mind, which is created by his own mind. And I often think that, you know, we live in the world, but actually we live within our own minds, and the constructions and the thoughts and the ideas of our own mind, and we live within that thing. We don't realize how much we're imprisoned by the particular patterns of our own mind, our own attitudes, and our likes and dislikes and so on. And that if we could overcome some of the automatic responses, our minds would open up and we'd get much more in touch with the vastness and the joy of what is life. He says, Baba says, now, just as we have Sheikh Nasruddin, in the same way there was Sheikh Mahmud. So it must be another. Sheikh Nasruddin, Devi Maharaj was mentioning, is a fabulous, extraordinary figure, very well known all throughout the East. And there, in other cultures, have figures like him too. He's kind of the wise fool. He's a complete idiot, and yet there's something. There's a lot of wisdom about it. I don't know if we have. What do we have? In our culture, who's like that? I don't know.
Forrest Gump.
Yeah. Forrest Gump's not as likable, or maybe he is, not as likable as Nasruddin. I don't know. Kramer? Or he's just a fool. Maybe George. I don't know. Thinking of those guys. I don't know. Anyway, it's an archetype. But this is Sheikh Mahmud. One day he was laboring. He got a beautiful job. He came across a merchant who gave him 2 pots of ghee. Clarified butter, and he wanted him to carry them from one town to another. Our professor, no, I mean our Swami Amma, says that his name was Sheikh Chali. Maybe he changed his name after I knew him. And Baba laughs real hard at us. Do you understand that? No, you don't. So Amma is Baba's secretary, and she was a former professor. And she could be a little pedantic, and she'd be sitting there, and when Baba had a memory lapse, she would always chirp up, dip, 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 dip. And so sometimes Baba didn't like it too much. She got a little annoyed. And so he says, our Swami Amma says his name's Sheikh Charlie, it's a little pedantic that is that it wasn't Sheikh Mahmoud, it was Sheikh Charlie. So Baba's having a little bit of a go at her. So Sheikh Charlie carried the pots and began to walk. Now this incident took place in India, so it's an Indian story. The merchant told him he would give him 3 rupees. In the old days, 3 rupees meant a lot of bucks. So anyway, he began to carry them. Now Charlie Saab began to think, I'm going to really fool him. What I'm going to do is I'm going to get the money and I'm going to buy hens. In those days, you could get 15 hens for 3 rupees. Everything was very cheap. I'll begin to take care of them, this is Sheikh Charlie saying. I'll begin to take care of them, and they will lay eggs, and soon there'll be 300 chickens, and then hens, and then 1,000 hens, and then 3,000 hens, and it will keep multiplying. Then I'll sell them, and I'll buy sheep, and I'll take care of sheep. Now he is carrying the pot and thinking, then I'll have 1,000 sheep. Oh God, I'll earn so much money. Then I'll sell the sheep. Then I'll buy a big house. Then I'll look for a nice woman and I'll get married. Then I'll start my own business. I'll have my own office. At the right time, I'll go home for my lunch, for my meals. I will drive my own car. If my wife would ever be late to give me lunch instead of giving me lunch at 12 o'clock, if she ever gave it to me at 12:15, I'd tell her, hey, what is this? And he shook his head, and all the pots fell on the ground and smashed. These, the illustration of how we live in our minds, right? Those pots were made of clay, so they broke. He could not really take them to the other town, so he went back to the merchant and said, oh, sage, he asked, the boss said, what did you do? He said, due to my mistake, they broke. Baba said, ghee, clarified butter, in those days was very expensive. So the merchant said, now you'll have to work for me for 12 years without any pay. So Bhatrahari, the poet, said, as that man began to play in the realm of his mind, in the creation of his own mind, as he began to dance in it, he broke the pot. And then he had to work for the merchant for 12 years without pay. So this is what happens when you start wandering in the realm of your mind. Only that person is very fortunate, the person who becomes absorbed in drinking the nectar of love, of the effulgent inner self while meditating. Now your questions. So that was Baba's preliminary to answering some questions, which I'll get to in a minute. But that, I've heard that story told a different way, where he's fantasizing all these things, and then he breaks it and he tells the boss, and the boss gets all furious at him, yelling at him, and the Sheikh Charlie or Sheikh Nasruddin or whoever it was, says to him, what are you complaining about? You only lost a pot of ghee worth a few rupees. I lost a house, a wife. I'm the one who should be complaining. That's the mind. Okay. Dear Babaji, do those people who sit very close to you receive more grace than the people who sit far away from you? Good question. Baba said, not really. The people who sit far away, I really see them. I don't even look at the people who sit here. It's very natural for the vision. I look out here. The eyes always look away. You see those pillars? I see all the people who sit behind them. So along with my vision, it's very certain are very likely that the people who sit there receive more grace. This reminds me of a story which is in the Mahabharata. You know, the Mahabharata is one of the two main epics of India. There's the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, and every school kid knows these books. They're filled with tales, and they're filled with spiritual teachings, and so on. And the Mahabharata is about the Great War. Two parts of a family had a war. Two parts of the cousins, the Kauravas and the Pandavas. And they had a big war of a kingdom that was lost in a gambling game. But so they had a big fight. So this is about that. And the Bhagavad Gita, sorry, I thought I was over that. Now I'm back here. In Queensland, I was... I need my lemon drink, but no, forget it. No, forget it. You just have to bear with me. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, what was I saying?
The war.
The Mahabharata. Well, something or other. Oh, yeah, the Bhagavad Gita. That's what I wanted to tell you. The famous scripture, the Bhagavad Gita, is a chapter in the Mahabharata. It's just suddenly there's this extraordinarily luminous chapter that they've extracted, and it's become the main scripture of India. And it happens when the battle is about to happen. And Arjuna is the great archer. He's also the hero of the story that Bob is about to tell. And Krishna is driving the chariot for him. And you'll understand that from this story. And then they go on the battlefield, and Arjuna says, why do I have to fight my relatives? And he didn't want to do it, and he feels full of despair. And then Krishna gives him a beautiful teaching about the self and about yoga and so on. Anyway, so this is... in the Mahabharata, there were relatives, and they were divided into two, and there was a big war. People in both parties thought they would get the favor of the Lord. That's Lord Krishna, who was around at that time. They would go to Lord Krishna and ask for his special favor. So they went to him. The Lord knew they were coming to ask him. Only the Lord knows his own ways. It's very difficult for us to know his ways. He went to sleep. He was lying quietly in his bed. So Arjuna, from the Pandava party, and Duryodhan from the Kaurava party, so he's the villain, Duryodhan, and Arjuna is the great hero, he went to see Krishna. So Duryodhan was a sovereign. He was truly a king. The other one, Arjuna, was the brother of a king, and he was the devotee of the Lord. So there were five Pandava brothers, and Arjuna was the great archer. Yudhisthira was the king. Duryodhan went there and wondered where he should sit. So he chose the place near Lord Krishna's head. He's sleeping. So he sat there. And Arjuna was a great devotee of God. Because he had so much devotion, he sat next to the Lord's feet. You know, man comes, goes, sits, stands up, gives, receives, talks, and does all his actions according to his own mentality, according to his own nature, according to his own worthiness. Whatever he does, whatever ego he has, that is revealed. For this reason, man should have a good nature for his good actions. Just by seeing a person, you can always tell his nature. You can always tell his frame of mind. And by watching his actions and by watching his behavior, you can tell who he is. But this is an aside from Baba, about what he observes. Anyway, Lord Krishna was still sleeping. Even though the Lord was sleeping, he was awake. He wasn't a being who would be asleep sleeping. While sleeping, he'd be awake. He knew that they were sitting there. Within a short time, he sprang up and he pretended he was looking at his feet. And he looked at Arjuna and said, "Oh, Arjuna, when did you come?" Arjuna said, "Just now I came." And Krishna said, "Why did you come?" Arjuna, "I came to ask you for help in the war." And Krishna said, "Oh, yes, yes, I will help you. I will help you." (Clears throat) And Arjuna asked him that whether Krishna and his massive army, he had an army, he was the king also, would join hands with the Pandavas during the war. So Duryodhana, who's sitting near his head, understands that Krishna might say yes before he asks him why he came. And he interrupted the conversation and he told Krishna that he had the same request. And since he'd come there first, Krishna should entertain his request first. And Krishna had already made his decision to side with the Pandavas, that's Arjuna's part of the family. But he came up with a clever solution to his problem. He said, he'll divide the requested item into two parts and let them choose which part each one wants to have during the war. He tells this to Duryodhana, that he's doing this because he wants to accommodate both cousins. And one part, or one possibility, is you get Krishna by himself, who he will not wield arms or strike a blow on the battlefield. You just get Krishna. And the other choice is you get the entire army, massive army, Krishna's army, with weapons of all kinds. You get the choice? One is just the person of the Lord, and the other is this massive army. You could say it's a choice between spirit and matter, isn't it? And he also told Duryodhana that unfortunately when he woke up, his eyes first fell on Arjuna. See, he looked far away and he saw Arjuna. That's the brings it back to what Baba was saying. And he'd already asked Arjuna for the reason for his presence, and he was honor bound, therefore, to give Arjuna the first choice. So Duryodhana, after calling in the lawyers and so on, reluctantly agreed to it. And so Arjuna chose Krishna and tells him that he willingly agrees to the condition of his not taking up arms during the battle. And Duryodhana is unable to believe his luck. A bad choice. He says that this is the biggest mistake of Arjuna's life, just to pick. So he's overjoyed because he gets the whole army. And he thanks Krishna for his offer and he leaves the room in glee. And then the text says that Krishna is seen with a gentle an enigmatic smile playing on his lips. And that's the end of the story. And of course, you know who made the right choice. So Arjuna made the right choice, and Krishna drove his chariot. Krishna was his charioteer, and then he gave him the instruction on the battlefield as his charioteer. And of course, the Pandavas won the war, thanks to Krishna being there. So that's why it's good to sit far away. Is that straining it a little bit? A couple more questions. Question. If one feels very intense anger, is it true that one should not repress the feeling, that such repression is harmful? On the other hand, might it mean that one could strike another person? Is this a contradiction? So, a question about anger. Baba says, those people who say that you should not control your anger are wrong. You should control it. In fact, you should try to control your anger the moment it arises. If you were able to do that, it might turn into love. Anger, lust, greed are all the same feeling. That's a really interesting remark. Anger, lust, greed. If you could control them, they would turn to love. They're all desire, aren't they? They're all from desire. Anger is frustrated desire. You get angry when you don't get what you want. And so Baba says, if we were to give expression to every wave of anger that arises in us, What else would we be able to do in life? Indian philosophy emphasizes self-discipline and self-control. Eventually, anger is going to subside on its own. But if you were to control it, it would subside right now. You must not let your body express the feelings of your mind. Find out what the root of anger is. You don't have to deal with anger itself. What is more important is to deal with the root of anger. What causes it? Questioner says, what is the root of anger? And Baba says, ego, self-pride. Don't attach any importance to that. The questioner says, trying to do anything is an expression of ego, so why isn't expressing anger an expression of ego? And Baba says, there are two kinds of ego, proper and improper. It is proper ego to try to subjugate the improper ego. That's very clever. Reminds me of the question that was the turning point in my own sadhana when I asked him about ego. And he say, make good use of ego by saying, I am the self. Not I am a king or a beggar, but I am the self. Not putting yourself down or puffing yourself up, but remembering your true nature. Remember that, and then it'll work very well. Two more short ones? He was sleeping, but he was awake. Question, what makes a person fall from yoga? What becomes of him afterwards? Baba says, if a person makes a mistake while pursuing yoga, he falls. Sometimes this happens because of the number of obstacles. Sometimes the past impressions, the samskaras become strong, these ancient tendencies that affect the mind. When these overtake a person, he falls. However, a yogi's fall is not a total fall, because later on he can rise higher. Even after his fall, he can pursue yoga once again, provided he has the interest. The virtues that he accumulated in his practice, in his sadhana, bring him back to the yogic life. They do not allow him to go anywhere else. The Bhagavad Gita says that a fallen yogi takes birth in his next lifetime in a very pure and wealthy family where he can pursue yoga very easily and attain the ultimate state. So you can have a fall if you make the wrong choice. Every moment is a moment of choice. Every moment is a moment of choice, and you can move upwards or downward in every moment. But there's always another moment and another choice. And ultimately, there's something inside of us that will only be satisfied with the upward movement, with the upliftment, toward the movement towards the truth and towards the self. And so even if we fall, it's a temporary fall. Temporary might mean two or three lifetimes worth, of course. But ultimately, the system will move us back towards the truth. Finally, question. In the Indian tradition, the search for a satguru, true guru, is often long and arduous, and frequently much testing of the would-be devotee takes place. Here in America, one may walk in, pay a fee, receive a mantra and shaktipat, and immediately one is placed in a relationship with a guru. It means you can meet Baba and so on. I had to go to India to find Baba, but you know, after Baba went to the West, then people could just walk in. Is the relationship between you and your devotees the same as the relationship between you and your guru? And Baba, of course, spent about 25 years searching for his guru till he finally connected with him. Baba says, yes, once you receive Shaktipat, the awakening of the inner energy, the relationship will be the same as mine with my guru. Once you receive Shaktipat, the relationship grows. It never decreases. I do not have to test all of you, because you test yourselves. You know what you've attained. You know what is within yourself. From your own attainment, you can tell how far you've come. Through your own discipline, meditation, and service, you can find out what you've attained. These things test you all the time. Therefore, I do not really need to test you. That's Baba's answer. Is that comforting? Or not? Okay. All right, so let's meditate for a while. And what the essence of what Baba's talking about is the spiritual movement, spiritual sadhana, is to move towards the self, to move towards a place inside where there's clarity, where there's love, where there's peace. And when you start to do that consciously, that's when it said that you've begun to do your practice, you've begun to do your sadhana. And it's a great thing. And then everything in your life, you can evaluate that way. Am I moving towards the light, or am I moving away from it? Am I moving towards upliftment, or am I moving towards contraction? Am I moving towards love and towards joy, or am I moving in the opposite direction? And as we meditate, as we grow, we learn how to keep moving in that higher direction. And so now let's meditate. We'll meditate for 10 minutes. And the goal of meditation is the inner self. Every person has the inner self unimpaired and perfect within. And of course it's the mind and the movements of the mind and the tendencies of the mind that get in our way. But if we quiet down, let the mind become peaceful, then the power of the self will start to dawn. A very good way to quiet the mind is to use the mantra, Om Namah Shivaya. You can repeat that to yourself. Or just go directly towards that which is most intimate, that which is most central, that which is most you, that place inside. So we'll meditate now for 10 minutes. And once again, great love and respect. I welcome you all with all my heart. Satguru Nath. Maharaj Ki Jai.